Bluebird, rather than blueberry, the Bluebird talk for the early morning training sessions for the volunteers of April 24th, 1990. Okay. We're going to spend a little bit of time in here and then we're going to go outside. We're talking about bluebirds, and some of the kids were wanting, you know, kids. I guess we can call the trail guys kids. Some of the trail guys, that's what you start with kids. Some of the trail guys are wondering, can we take the kids to any of the bluebird boxes in the area? So we'll hike up, and you can. I just think that at a certain point, we shouldn't go necessarily and open them. I don't think we should have the kids tap on and open them, because you can watch and see if there is any bluebird activity. They can see it from the trail, just from standing on the edge of the field. But I'll tell you, we'll go out there in a little bit, take a hike, and see what we can find. Last year, I think everybody here knows Earl Eberhardt. He helps out once in a while. And last year, he went crazy building bluebird houses here. And we have 20-some, I forget, bluebird houses between Dimmer's across the road and here and a couple down here. And there's some down by the loop here. And we're really not expecting a whole lot there for bluebirds, but we just thought we'd put them up for kicks. Bluebirds, if you're going to put your bluebird house nesting box in a good spot, what I would call the classic spot, would be not too close to any outbuildings, barns, and such. I'd put it out in an area that's pasture-like, not necessarily a mowed lawn. We have a combination of some longer grasses, not the real tall hay meadow, although that's not, you know, could be worse. And if there's a few little saplings or shrubs nearby to perch on, because the nesting box should never have a perch on it. And we'll talk about that in a little bit when we talk about some of the problems associated with bluebirds nesting boxes. What's really strange is that even, I think it was in 1979 or 78, in Minnesota, when the listing comes out for rare, you know, an uncommon species, the bluebird was considered one of those. And it was, you know, a lot of people, I remember, you know, Jay hadn't seen the bluebird in years, and it was the kind of thing that was a lot of concern about where are the bluebirds. And so in the past 10 years, the bluebird's recovery has been just incredible. But then there's been a lot more effort put into it. A lot of people, there's a bluebird recovery team, there's now bluebird recovery conferences, and most of these are volunteers. These are people that are not professionally, you know, paid to do this. This is all volunteer efforts. I'm active with the Audubon chapter up in Chisago County. We have a guy there who's on the bluebird recovery effort, and he donates every year all the material. 160, the past 2 years, we've built 160, 170 bluebird houses. He donates, he cuts it all out, all the materials. Anybody that wants to go and build them can take them home as long as they promise to keep maintaining the trail, try and keep records. When I say trail, bluebird trail, we have records taking every, you know, week or so, and going out checking and seeing how they're doing.
What's the average number, you know?
How many bluebirds in a house?
No, how many bluebirds do you have?
Oh, I don't know if there's an average, because some people just...
Something that last year, we had, I think, 7 to 9.
7 to 9? Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's people that are really into it that'll, especially some retired folks, that will spend the whole day driving and bring up the lunch with them and driving and checking their lines. Sherburne County, Sandy County, Chisago County, Western Prestige. Some of these areas are, they seem, you know, you got more agricultural, you get a little ways out, and there's lots of bluebirds. There's not a day now when coming from my place to here that I don't see bluebirds. It's just not a day. And there's more bluebird houses out as well. And they've done really well. The thing is, it was because of human activity that they started to decline so badly. The bluebird is a cavity nester. Okay, it's in the thrush family, which makes it a first cousin to the robin. Okay, and since it's in the thrush family, you know, all of them in the thrush family nest either on the ground or up in a tree. This bird is a cavity nester, yet it's not built for excavating its own nest like a woodpecker. It has to have a cavity already there. So there's a problem. If there's a shortage of those types of, you know, nesting opportunities, they're just not, you know, there's too much competition for those sites, and you're not going to have them reach their potential. So, and the other problem is, and we're going to talk a little bit about some of the other birds that cause problems, with probably two other cavity nesters, house sparrows and starlings. And those are both imports. brought in. In fact, it was 100 years ago. Everybody celebrate the anniversary in March. 100 years ago, this last March, it was the Starling brought in Central Park. 100 years ago, March 12th. It was not a big deal Earth Day. At any rate, and starlings are real, you know, they'll get into these nesting boxes and out-compete bluebirds and house sparrows. Not only will out-compete them, but the house sparrows will kill bluebirds in the nesting box and flight lines. You can find, I've seen them, dead birds that are maybe 14 days old or so. The whole back of the head, feathers all gone, with a skeleton in a sense, and peck them, kill them. And so there's an oath that all bluebird trail people take. Your number one oath is that you shall not let a house sparrow nest in your box. And it's a real tough, I remember the first time coming from one of my boxes and checking and seeing two or three house sparrow eggs in a nest in there, and you really fight have this dilemma. What do I do with these eggs and the birds? I just can't crush these or throw them on the ground or anything. And so I left them. And I thought about it. The next day I came back out. But you really, it's a real serious problem. House sparrows were brought over from Europe, as were starlings, because, they really felt that some of the people coming over, the immigrants and such, felt, homesick for some of the familiar things back home, and some of these birds were part of their childhood. And they brought the house sparrow over, and it was good for eating insects over in Europe and such, and so they bring it here and thought it would be a great bird to have around. And really spread west very quickly. In fact, they feel the railroad may have had a real influence on spreading with house sparrows, because they would follow the grain spilled from cars along tracks, and house sparrows could just move along. So they didn't realize, though, that they could be a real problem, too, in terms of eating grains. So the house sparrow was not all that it was cracked up to be. Here's the Madonna. Male, this is the best kind of house sparrow. In my sense. Isn't that awful?
They're self-protective.
No, they're not.
No.
Oh, starlings.
This is nuts. Starlings, house sparrows, and pigeons are three unprotected species. So these are not protected.
There's a lot of variation in the color or something, isn't it?
In the male. Okay, yeah. Because this bib, that's right.
I've never seen them with that much blood.
Okay, what happens is that they get this, they lose this by wear, feather wear. It's not so much of gaining a pigment, it wears away. Some birds will take on color by feather wear, and the house sparrow is one of those. What's interesting about the house sparrows is that the male is more faithful to the nesting box or the nesting site than he is to the female. And that's really a key in trying to control these guys. Because he will sing and do his little song near the nesting site. Let's say it's your bluebird box. The female is attracted to that site and leaves the box. If she's killed or gone, he doesn't move. He stays there and sings again. And there'll be another female that'll be attracted to the site. No. So one of the real keys in trying to keep these guys out of your nesting boxes is controlling not so much her, is taking him.
Well, you can just move the box.
Yeah, you can try to do that. Although, the other thing is, because you see these characters so much around barns and outbuildings, you don't even put their boxes too close to these areas. You try to keep them out and away. You minimize the chances of having house sparrows. You just have to stay on top of it. So I don't have that kind of problem, except the one time I had my house, I had that problem. I haven't had since then. Something about the bluebirds, though. When the pioneers came across cutting trees, cavity-bearing trees, fence posts used to be all, when people used to fence their land, used to be,
oak,
and there'd be holes, and they'd be hollow. Nowadays, most fence posts are steel posts. Pretty hard for bluebirds to nest in a steel post. And so, all in the last 20 years, all of a sudden, it was this downward slide of bluebirds. But now, as a result of all of a sudden renewed interest in seeing all kinds of these bluebird houses, and there's different styles. There's the Peterson house, what's called the Peterson house. Dick Peterson lives in the Oak area, developed this house. Years, it's his hobby, it's his passion in designing this, so it has a nicely, slanted roof to keep the predators, sheds rain nicely, but also makes it a little harder for a cat to sit up there and to reach in. very, you know, specific measurements as far as the opening. Although it's oval shaped and some birds can get in there, other birds are discouraged from getting in there. It's deep enough, although it's been found that bluebirds tend to like shallower where the nest at the Florida is a little closer up. His are deeper and funnel down, so it doesn't take, they don't waste up. It's not a square at the bottom, it's tapered. And his theory there was that it takes less nesting material. If it's bigger, they're going to have to put in more nesting material. This way they don't have to spend so much time and all this energy. They also, by having a deeper, the probing arm of a raccoon or a cat is less likely to
reach. So why did you make those holes oval on those nesting boxes?
How do you make those like that?
I mean, why? Why were they so oval? I thought they had to be quite small.
Well, that's the size, I don't know, Earl, he did it to the plants. And the Petersons are an oval plant, are an oval. I don't know. Wrens can get into too. Wrens can be very nasty on bluebirds. Another reason you don't want to set them maybe too close to thickets and brush, hedges, because wrens are using wrens can help compete and they can be nasty on the young ones as well, killing them. Wren with his bubbly song is a cute little bird, but if you're trying for bluebirds, try and, you know, provide a little house for the wren in the hedge or something, and then you have your bluebird house further up. I have a this goes, I'll bring this with when we take our little pipe. This fits on the front of the box. The front of the box folds down, you clean things out every year. This fits right on the edge of that board. So the hole is right here. Cat can't reach all in and down. Raccoon can't. These little edges are turned so it's kind of sharp and it's little, you know, foils and like that. We haven't tried making these yet. This was given to us, and we might try it. It's another function. It can act as a perch, so the bird can act, although they really don't need it. It'll be interesting to see how they do it. The bluebird in the spring, as with most birds, the male comes back first. He comes back in the spring before the female, and for them, south for them is not the rainforest. South for this bird, maybe in a line from across Nebraska, Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, that going across country in that latitude. It just has to go far enough south where it can find some insects. Although, in the fall of the year, when we start seeing flocks of these birds, and in the fall, when you see a flock of bluebirds, you're usually seeing family groups in Canada lines. Those are family groups, and they're starting, when there's a decline of insects, they're starting to feed more on berries and fruits. When they start coming in the spring, the males come first. He is going to sing. He may, if this was an area, 40 acres, this room, and we had nesting boxes along the perimeter here, he might sing from several nesting boxes from those sites. Sometimes you see him sitting right on the nesting box. It's his perch. He can be seen visually and heard. The female comes along, and she will accept one of these nesting boxes. She makes the decision of which one. That sounds not good. and she takes the nesting box and she'll build the nest. Okay. During this time of the nest building and the display, he's pretty aggressive. He will fight off other males and such. This is also the period when they're copulating. This is when he's very aggressive, okay, towards other males. During the period when she's nesting, okay, then all of a sudden this aggressive business falls off. Okay. He's not so aggressive. That's also the point when he is basically, you know, he's finished with her. However, he does, after those eggs are incubated, and I would guess he doesn't share in that. She does incubate it. And I didn't look at it, so look it up. I'm guessing for robin, I think it's about 12 or 13 days. So it's around there. 12 or 14 days, I think we could be safe in saying, for incubating of the eggs. And it's generally 5 eggs. And they're a pale blue color, like all members of the thrush family. However, some bluebirds produce a white egg. And if she produces a white egg 1 year, chances are the next year will be a white egg. But generally, it's a pale blue colored egg. A little paler than the robin's egg. As they get older, the bluebird might produce more eggs. And she can produce 6 to 7 eggs. It's kind of like the deer. A doe, the first year producing her young, her first crop, will be one fawn. But after that point, two is the norm, okay? And then they may even produce three. And it's kind of the same thing, although they don't get above six and seven. It's not like, you know, 3 years it's 10 and then 12. It's just six and seven is pretty much the limit. It's also kind of interesting is that they're finding now with bluebirds, they're doing blood tests. There's some research I was reading where they've done some blood tests on some. Just the same kind of tests they do on these paternity cases to see who's the father. They're finding that up to a quarter of the young in these nesting boxes are young whose parent is elsewhere. Okay, and another, whether it's male or female. So sometimes females are coming to into the nest of another bird and laying an egg and then leaving. Because it's a shortage of nesting boxes. And she might come in and lay the egg there. While she's incubating, this guy could be off and have another mate in one of the boxes in the other part of the field. Okay, so it's not this faithful relationship like an eagle has or a Canada goose. Most birds are not monogamous. Okay, most birds aren't. So he may have two females in a certain area. However, after the period of incubation and those eggs hatch, he's going to be kept busy because he has to be catching insects to feed. He's feeding the young, and he's also bringing in insects for the female. So he's kept busy for about the first 6 days because those young are continuously brooded. They're born. When young birds are called, there's two terms. You've probably heard these. There's somebody saying they're young. Oh, your kid is so precocial. And you don't hear people talking about, oh, your kid is so altricial. There are two opposites. Birds can be altricial or precocial. Altricial is born naked, helpless, eyes shut, totally dependent on parental care. Okay, as we were once. When the young are born precocial, like a killdeer or a pheasant, they hatch in the egg, they have down feathers, they have feathers, and they're up running, following mom or dad, or the baby duck swims after mom. Okay. So bluebirds, as other members of the thrush family, and most perching birds, are born altricial. So that means they're continuously brooded for 6 days. The eyes open after about 6 days, they start getting some feathers on them. At this point, mom can leave the nesting box, and both of them will take turn, will come be bringing back food to feed the young. And they have to average, be bringing back, they'll make roughly one or two trips every 5 minutes. So you're talking about 12 trips an hour, and those young are fed, each young is fed, you know, 2 or 3 times an hour. So they're kept very busy continuously. And then somewhere in between, you got to grab something to eat yourself. After about 13 days, they'll have their feathers. They start with the little pin feathers. It's not going to look like this, but you will be able to sex them after 13 days. You can tell whether you've got male or female because the males have the darker blue color around them. 14 days is a very critical time. If you have nesting boxes and you're keeping records on them, 14 days, it's a good idea not to open that box. Because at that point, they could fledge. And if they fledge out of fear and alarm, you open the box and sometimes they're scared, they can flutter out. And if they flutter out, you know, they will not, you can go grab them, put them in that box, they're not going to stay in there. They'll go out and get them again. And it's just, they can survive, but the chance of a predator, a cat or something, getting them is very high. The average lifespan they feel on a bluebird, any bluebird, is 2 years. It's not very long. Like other songbirds, it's a pretty short life. So the best thing to do if you're watching a nesting box, if you know when they hatched approximately, when you get up around 14 days, don't go to, you can watch it from a little distance with binoculars. And you can get an idea if the parents are feeding. If you notice that parents aren't coming and feeding yet every, you know, so many minutes, you might wonder, oops, something's wrong here. What some people do, a little trick that they'll do is they'll put a blade of grass over the opening or find some spider web and put that over the opening. Come back the next day and if they see that's been disturbed, they know that something's been going in and out. If it's not been disturbed, you better open that box. If the young aren't dead, then you've got to try and feed them. Because they can't easily go for more than a few hours without, you know, there could be a real trouble. So the bluebird is, as a result of the nesting box, it's on the way back. It seems to be a real success story. And it's such a popular bird. I mean, it's pretty, everybody could, you know, is enamored by the bluebird. And I think because of that, and the song too, the male has a song, it's very robin-like, but it's more warbly. very pretty. When we go out, we'll see if we can hear some of them out in the field. I don't know.
Did you say how long they have to be before they can leave the box?
Well, they can fledge and leave the nest as early as 14 days.
But you said that's in the field.
It's usually a little bit early. But usually, I would say 14 to 20 days is normal when they leave. When those young fledge and leave that nest, they may still need to be fed. Like a robin, you see a robin sitting in the yard, sometimes mom or dad comes down and gives them. The little ones are still begging, they still want some food, even though they might be able to flutter 50 to 100 feet. Right away, almost immediately, mom is done. She is done with them. She has copulated again, and she is back building a nest within hours of the young fledging, or 1 or 2 days, and she is renesting. And they can have as many as 3 nests in a summer. Pretty unusual this far north. 2 isn't that uncommon. That's another problem with these guys. 2 is normal in this area. And as many as 3 or 4 broods in one summer. So very prolific. It is probably the most successful, when I say successful in terms of, you know, its abundance and such, probably the most successful wild bird there is the house sprout. It's just the kind of thing you've got to try. There's been developed some new people say, how do you get rid of them? What if they're short of shooting? I mean, if they live in a town, that's not a real viable answer unless you have a BB gun. There are sparrow traps that actually can be fit right inside the box and catch the sparrow. Somebody else was saying there is a... somebody's telling me that. I never used a sparrow box trap. But they catch the sparrow, and the sparrow does these alarm calls in the trap. And the alarm calls are just terrify the other sparrows. And they won't use the nest. And so that's, you know, it's kind of being tricky, using that bird's natural history to fight, you know, to spread, to prohibit this, you know, increase of those birds. But it's a neat, it's a challenge if you've got problems with house sparrows. Another nesting box that you might want to try, and then if you've got real problems with house sparrows, is a nesting box on the top where there's a big hole on the top. We had plans in the kitchen table, you might have seen those, and the hole is maybe so big around, right in the roof of the box. And it has hardware cloth, a 1/4 inch or so, that mesh over it. And the idea there, and this fellow in Wisconsin who developed it, and he's claiming he's got a number of years of data to prove, he feels very strongly that is the best bluebird box. Of course, anybody that develops one feels they have the best. But he's adamant about it. And I heard him when I was talking to him. He made a mistake of just stopping and talking to this guy. I couldn't get away from him. But he's got the blowfly problem. I didn't even mention that. We'll talk about that. He's cut that. He's cut house sparrows, because house sparrows don't like to go in there if there's this opening in the rain. He feels that the old fence posts that the bluebirds have were open at the top. They've always had these. There's no problem. The moisture isn't going to hurt them. The young are well brooded. The blowfly problem, I should mention, because that's a very serious parasite problem. And we talk about raccoons, we talk about house sparrows and such. If you have raccoons and cats, you can go with a guard like that. Some people, if they have a post, they just put flashing, aluminum flashing, like a bird feeder, kind of a squirrel guard thing, tack that around so, you know, can't climb up the post. That works. The blowfly problem is a little trickier, because the blowfly, it's a fly, and lays the eggs in the nesting material. The eggs hatch, the larva of the flies, which are maggots, live down in the nesting material, and at night when it gets dark, they crawl up to the nestlings and attach themselves and suck blood. Now that doesn't kill the babies so much, but it weakens them. And it weakens them to the point sometimes that they're easily malnourished, or a little change in weather can kill them. So it's a real problem. And there are some... I have a name of a product if you're interested. The active ingredient is pyrethrin. You can buy it at any place that have horses. And you can apply a little bit of that in the nesting box. Not on the nestlings now, but in the nesting box. And that supposedly takes care of keeping them out of there. What some people do as well, and that's another reason you should, after every nesting season, is clean out that nest. And so when the young are fledged, clean out the nest. Pull it all out. Let them start over. Okay? gets it cleaned up. If you can, that the pesticide works, there was another trick. Oh, what some people will do as the eggs are laid, since the female comes every morning, the egg is usually laid by noon until the clutch is completed. 5 eggs, 5 days to lay the eggs. Before she starts incubating, some people will actually go in, carefully lift the eggs, not, you know, the nest that the egg is sitting on, lift them up and pull out some of the nest underneath. Because that just provides more cover and habitat for the blowfly. So they'll take out some of that and set everything down. Some people have tried putting in a false floor of mesh so that the larva would fall through the mesh and collect down on it. That hasn't been proven to work too well, not consistent enough. So it's something, every once in a while when you check your nesting boxes, it's something when they're laying their eggs, you want to check to see if you notice any of these larvae and such. And it seemed to me I heard of a trick, and I can check up on this, where some people would take a Q-tip with some of that pesticide and shove the Q-tip under the nest. And that seems to, you know, or a little cotton ball or something with some of it on there. But blowflies, you know, we don't think of the insect problems, but they can be a problem. Even another one, they don't kill them directly, but there are some insects that will kill the bluebirds directly. Black flies in some areas will cover those young and kill them in taking blood. Wasps, bluebirds will not use the nest if you've got a hornet nest in there. And that's a common problem in nesting boxes, especially if you're not on top of it. I remember I had not checked one of mine for a few weeks, and I went out, put my finger in the hole, pull it down, yow! And there was a big paper wasp nest in there. You know, and you immediately close it up, and I already had my finger there, I had gotten stung. But the point is, they're not going to use that either. It's not so much that they're going to sting them, they just don't use it. And they probably would sting them, but bluebirds seem to know they have more smarts than people, I guess. And so you just got to keep those, try and keep them off.
How does the bluebird nest open so that the nest is understood?
Well, it's packed in there in such a way when you open it, it all stays in. Front swings down. Of the Peterson house, the kind we have. And it all stays in there very neatly. Okay, and it doesn't all tumble out. If you have wrens, there's all sticks and twiggy, very twiggy. House sparrow nests are just a jumble. It's not a cup shape. Bluebird nests would be cup shaped, made of grasses, usually dried grasses, maybe a lining of some fur or some feathers. Okay. Grasses are a really good key, and it's a neat cup shaped nest. House sparrows is a very messy, just this mass of stuff in there somewhere, some eggs, lots of feathers. Tree swallows often nesting boxes, and we seem to be having good luck out at ours right now. When we went out there yesterday, we got a bunch of tree swallows out there. Now that isn't bad. Their major problem with tree swallows is that they just use the box. They don't kill the bluebirds or anything, but they use the boxes. Now, it's a good insect eater, and it's a very pretty little bird, very graceful and fun to watch. But if you're trying to get bluebirds, you get frustrated because the tree swallows are always taking them. Some people do to try and combat the tree swallow problem. The tree swallow problem is to put two nesting boxes close to each other. Because the theory there is, and I mean close, I mean maybe just a few feet apart, that the bluebirds will use one, but not the other one. Because two bluebirds, two different males, would not tolerate being that close to each other. And just as two tree swallow males in the couples will not tolerate being that close. However, if one's one species, one's another, no problem.
That's what I was saying. I asked you if you can ever use the trees down around the lake that I call
the true bluebird. They've been saying down there, and I think I know they were using them last year or a couple of years ago. Now a lot of those good cavity trees are so rotted that they've gone down. And I don't know if the one is using that nesting box down by the old, we have that box by the bleachers where the bleachers used to sit for bird bedding. I don't know if they're sitting there or not. We should go out. Any questions? We'll talk about some of this when we get outside too.